dogs.
Yeah, yeah.
So I thought it went well. And a lot of stuff she covered that I didn't have to ask some of the questions. So, but I thought it went
well. You already know the questions too, so I feel like you'll probably be pretty good at touching on them. When I start, I just typically I just start with sort of a tagline so that people know if they're listening to the recording, what's going on. So my name is Carlene Kowalczyk. I'm here with the Louisa County Historical Society. I am interviewing Vernon Fleming for the first time for our school integration project. And today is February the 16th, 2021. So thank you, Vernon, for being here today and talking with us.
Thank you for inviting me.
And being such a great lead person on this project. So if you maybe could just get us started by explaining grade school, where you went to grade school, and then how you first came to be a student at Louisa County High School and how you first heard about the Freedom of Choice program.
Sure. I started school at a one-room schoolhouse. It wasn't a Rosenwald school, but very similar. One teacher, one room, for seven grades, and that was called the St. Mark School. It was kind of a community school. Everyone walked to school. There was no buses, but yeah, no indoor plumbing, no electricity, but went there for through the fourth grade. And because of the separate but equal program, they built a elementary school called Shelfar that accommodated three of the elementary schools. It was Shady Grove, original Shelfar, and St. Mark. So that was my first experience being in a, you know, modern building that had, even though my class had fourth and fifth grade together, sixth grade was in a separate class, seventh grade in a separate class. So it was a step up from what we were used to. But I attended Shelfar for the fifth, sixth, seventh grade. And, of course, as I was in my seventh grade year, that was discussion about integration and part of freedom of choice. And I know my school performance was probably not stellar, but probably above average. I, you know, made honor roll a few years, but wasn't like a brainiac. But I know there was some discussion. My parents kind of attended PTA meetings, and I think they were shared about the opportunity for students to integrate. But I can't recall, but I think it was my elementary school principal, Ms. Askew, that, you know, suggested I enter Louisa County High School that first year of integration in fall of 1965. I wasn't quite sure, you know, what was my mindset, other than it was a change, adventure to, you know, meet some new students. So I said, you know, kind of, why not? It wasn't any pressure or strong encouragement. I was just saying, I think it was more, hey, it'd be a great idea for you to go. And I just said, you know, why not?
So you feel like you had a choice?
Yes, I felt I had a choice, but I kind of saw it as a new adventure and chose to do so. But no, there was no pressure to do it at all. So, and I think if I said no, because all of my peers and friends, even older sibling, you know, were going to the, you know, black schools, A.G. Richardson.
Did you talk to any of your friends or classmates about, do you remember about, you know, making this decision?
No, I didn't. You know, we were riding a bus at that point in time, but no, it was something that I don't recall discussing my plans to go, although after I went, those questions, why did you do that, you know, and be quite honest, you know, you think you're white, you're trying to be white, you know, why are you going to the white school? But no, beforehand, there was no discussion.
And how did you feel before, sort of leading up to the first day at Louisa County High School?
A little bit apprehensive, because I did not know a single other black person who was going. And, you know, getting on a different bus, because there was still the buses that were taking kids to the black schools, and then there was a bus that were going to the white schools. So I didn't know a soul, you know, that I could say, okay, I would see them at the school, not even another black person that I knew in advance would be there.
So that first day, you got on the white school bus to go to the Louisa County High School. And what was that bus ride like?
Good news is I was one of the first to get on the bus, so that was an empty bus for me to pick a seat that I wanted to sit by. And as the bus started to fill, you realized that no one was sitting beside me, that, you know, there was three kids on, you know, seats, and, you know, some standing, but they chose not to sit, you know, beside me.
And were you the only black student riding your
school bus? I was the only black student on the school bus all the way to school.
So when you got to school, did you recognize anyone
first day? No, really, I didn't know, because none of the kids from my neighborhood, even the black elementary school that I went to, was going to Louisa, so I didn't know anyone, not black or white. But now again, it was a sea of folks going from elementary school that I think we may have had 60 kids to a high school with, you know, over 500. It was a sea of faces and pretty much all white. I did not see can't recall seeing another black face. And it was kind of overwhelming with the number of people, you know, as big as it was, and going to kind of an assembly that first morning and being in that big of a crowd. And I don't think I'd ever been in a group that big, church or anywhere else, that big before. So I felt a little bit lost, felt very small, and probably, you know, I wasn't thinking about race at the time as much as just the, you know, magnitude and being overwhelmed by the size of the school and number of kids in the school. Yeah. But I did, you know, feel that I was different.
And you might have not, you might not remember this because you might have been so overwhelmed by everything that was going on, but the sea of people, did people seem friendly? How did people seem that first day?
That first day, and I can't remember that exactly, but I call it the first few days.
Yeah.
No, I felt more invisible. That there was probably no acknowledgement whatsoever. Then, like on the bus, yeah, no one would sit beside me. And you know, going through the school, there was, you know, stairs, but you know, that no one kind of reached out. No one did anything hostile that I recall that, you know, first few days, and but wasn't anyone friendly either.
Mm-hmm.
That I can recall.
Yeah. So, talking about not just the first day now, but just going that first year in general, do you recall any white students that opened up to you, that eventually welcomed you or were friendly to you?
No, I can't say that any were friendly. There were, and I stand corrected. Maybe that was somewhat friendly. My definition then of being friendly, that they would smile, or they would at least acknowledge my name in the context of something in school. So, yeah, you know, Vernon, you know, here's your turn to do something. But I do recall that first year there was one student. She was eighth grader like me. She happened to be the daughter of the sheriff, Brenda Cannon. She sat beside me. She did not ride my bus every day, but she would ride maybe once a month, and she would sit down beside me on the bus to school, which I thought was brave of her to do that, but she did, and I consider that and although we didn't talk, but it was, you know, a big deal for me that someone would sit beside me, especially a white girl, and no one else would. And in the school, you know, thinking of teachers, you know, I probably had two teachers that eighth grade year, my English teacher, Mrs. Pamela Johnson, who was a first and second year teacher, but she would smile, and to me that was a big event. And then there was my science teacher, Major Barron. She was retired Air Force, and he was, you know, friendly in the sense of would smile or call my name, you know, good morning Vernon or something like that. And those little small things were a big deal, but most of the teachers and students, you know, were kind of agnostic and saying, okay, you're here, but, you know, we won't have to acknowledge you at all. And I can't say that any were, you know, rude or offensive anyway, but pretty much I was a necessary, you know, person in the room.
Yeah, so not overtly hostile, I'm hearing, but not acknowledging somebody is also it's a form of being hostile without being hostile. So it sounds like those people that did go out of the way to acknowledge you and sit next to you on the bus or talk to you in class left a big memory for you. So did any of the teachers or administrators reach out to you to talk about your experience being one of the first black students, or did they just communicate with you about class materials?
No contact whatsoever, other than, you know, here's the assignment, turn in your assignment, or it's your turn to read or answer a question. That was it. But no, not a single question from a student or a teacher about how you're doing, how you're feeling. I do recall a black guy who, is going to be part of this program also. Joe Morris, who went in the cafeteria, you know, came to me and said, "Are you okay? If anybody bothers you, you know, let me know." And that, you know, meant a lot because, one, I didn't have contact with any other blacks, didn't have, share a class with any other blacks except Jim. And I shared with a black girl in Ed West, which girls were kept separate, but they were in the big gymnasium at the same time. And Walter Scott, who was another black guy that first year. But other than that, I didn't have any contact with the blacks. But when Joe Morris asked me that, that was, you know, kind of memorable, but no one else did. And the cafeteria was pretty much on the bus that, you know, there was no other person that would sit near you in the cafeteria.
So unstructured time, was there any time besides the ride on the school bus or the or sitting in the cafeteria that you really had this unstructured time to really feel sort of being different or separate?
Yeah, everyone had a study hall period. And again, that was a time that you're supposed to be doing, you know, homework, and that's what I did. But again, no, where other kids would kind of sit next to each other and talk and get yelled at by the study hall monitor, but that was never a problem for me. But in the later years, like the second or third year there, it's when things got more hostile and kids were throwing objects at the black kids and spitballs and paper and everything else. That was pretty offensive.
And that was more during unstructured time that
yes,
would happen?
Correct.
Yeah. So kind of jumping back to Joe Morris, you said you didn't know him, right, before going to school?
No, I did not.
Did you socialize with or become friends with any of the other black students outside of school once you all started attending Louisa County High School?
Unfortunately, because I'd lived 25 miles from the high school, it was get on the bus, and my parents worked full-time, so it was like get on the bus in the morning, get on in the afternoon. So there was no socialization time at all. So, you know, other than classrooms, which I didn't share with any other blacks, but there was no other opportunity for socialization, you know, before or after class.
Did you participate in any extracurricular activities like clubs or sports?
No. I'm not sure what was available for me to participate in, but I would see organizations around, you know, Future Farmers of America and other activities. I kind of knew that was going on, but I had no clue even how to join, how to participate, and so it was, you know, do my six or seven classes and get on the bus, go home. So it wasn't anything that I even considered or thought about whether I could or whether I should, but knowing that I could not stay after school because I had no way home, so that was not an option.
Had you been involved in any types of activities at your old schools?
Yes, probably at daytime classes and clubs, and Louisa had the same thing mm-hmm. with, you know, call it the newspaper staff or yearbook staff, and eighth graders could participate in some of that, but being isolated as I was, I even did not know even where to start to join or ask to join. And even, you know, being new to high school, I hardly knew what was involved with that. So
well, that's what I was thinking, is that coming in as an eighth grader rather than maybe if you had come in as a junior, you might have been involved in some extracurriculars at A.T. Richardson and had a little bit more of a feel for how to go about that. Did you feel like the teachers treated you similar to the white students in your class, and did you feel like you received the same support?
I saw students who had connections, because there were several students whose parents were teachers, some students whose parents were kind of well-known in the community, and the teachers knew those students. So, you know, even as an eighth grader, there were some students who were popular not only with their peers but also with the teachers because, you know, their parents were in the school system someplace in the community. So those students, you know, clearly were, tend to be at least acknowledged by the, you know, teachers. But from the standpoint of being, you know, I guess the only black in the class, no, I was not acknowledged. And as far as opportunities to do things, I guess, and another thing is those that had siblings in the school that, you know, teach themselves, okay, you're the younger brother, younger sister of so-and-so that I may have taught a few years ahead. So I didn't have any of that. So it's pretty much no connections to the teachers or other students that typically would happen. Like, I had an older sibling that went to A.G. Richardson, so that was a trail of, okay, you're so-and-so's younger brother, and teachers who remember them and students who remember the older siblings. That it makes a difference with getting acclimated and being invited to participate in things.
Do you think that that was sort of a consequence of social networks outside of school being sort of separate, so churches being separate, social circles being separate?
Yes, that was a big factor because, you know, a lot of kids would go to church together. And mm-hmm. No one from my church went to Louisa mm-hmm. High School, so that was isolated in many ways. So a lot of those connections were in school, out of school, and other activities that allowed those networks to be formed.
And you said that you were a fairly good student, so did you feel like your education had prepared you to enter Louisa County High School as an eighth grader?
Again, I was a pretty decent student, and I think maybe that's why I was encouraged to go, both from having some, at least, academic ability, not great, and partially may have been temperament also, that my parents, you know, told us not, my siblings and I, you know, not to get in trouble and not to fight. So I think the teachers at my elementary school probably saw, okay, at least he may be able to compete academically and won't, you know, cause any disturbance. That may have been a safe representation for the integration. So my grades suffered a little bit that eighth grade year. I wouldn't say significantly, but I did see other kids being able to, on tough problems, could at least work together, and they would kind of huddle, and I was kind of on my own. And neither of my parents, you know, finished high school, so I was not able to get much help at home, but I managed to get by.
And where do you fall in line with your siblings? Did you have any older siblings that were able to help you, or were you the oldest?
I was the youngest, okay. But my two older siblings, they were out of high school before I entered high school, okay. And then I had a brother who was a year ahead of me, and he was at Richardson, but for that first year, and he came over to Louisa the second year. I would pretty much say, yeah, we were on our own, both with his doing his own work and I doing mine.
Was there anyone at church or any groups that you were involved with outside of school that you felt kind of supported you and carried you through this experience?
As I recall, there wasn't anyone. Even at my church, I don't recall having any discussion with any adults. And like some of my, you know, peers, they asked the question, you know, why are you there? And, why are you not going to Richardson? Things of that sort. But I can't say there was anyone that was supportive, but, you know, probably I wouldn't say they were detrimental either. But I think most of the adults, many of them, you know, didn't think much about kids, what they were doing in school.
But your peers that you talked to, it sounds like they had a range of feelings or opinions about you going.
Yeah, most were questioning, why did I choose to do that? And, that was what I had explained all the time, because it was kind of unique. You know, why would you do that? For them, it just didn't make sense. Why would anyone choose to go there?
I think you've touched on quite a few of these. So did you ever have second thoughts about attending? And if so, what kept you going?
Because I never attended A.G. Richardson, I wasn't quite sure what it would be like going there. But now once I was at Louisa, I never had any thought to say I was going to leave. Because my brother was a year older. Came over that second year, so he made the commitment to come over, so I wasn't about to go where he had left. So, no, I never thought about leaving. I did, you know, maybe have, you know, questions about what it was like, probably less so that first year in, you know, years 65, 66, but in other years, you know, what would have been different had I gone to an A.G. Richardson, and the opportunities I saw my peers being elected class leaders, even the eighth grade, class president, secretary, vice president, treasurer. I said, okay, they were the popular kids. And, you know, kind of thought, okay, if I was at A.G. Richardson, would I have had those opportunities to serve? And probably from an economic standpoint, and my, you know, father was kind of a blue-collar worker, but in the black community, that was considered middle class. But as I went to Louisa County High School, I saw what, you know, really affluence is kids were dressed in, you know, fashionable clothes of the day as you looked on TV or magazines. And back then it was a bell-bottom trousers and, you know, penny loafer shoes and all those things that, you know, we, in my community, we wore whatever your parents bought at Sears and Roebuck. And if it was new, that was great. But I saw that, you know, there were, you know, clear affluence. And that was something that, you know, made me feel, one, just a little bit less than, but also gave me something to aspire to also. And I saw, you know, as I kind of looked around and saw that there were families that were very affluent, holding elected positions in the county and major positions, but also became aware also of prejudice based on economics. I rode the bus with a family that was very poor and looked like it was probably five or six kids living in the household, and they didn't dress well and smelled, and they were abused and talked about really bad by other white students on the bus. So I saw that was economic prejudice that was very prevalent also, that was bad, if not worse than they, you know, treated, you know, the black students.
It seems like it's a pretty strong lesson about prejudice within going to this school. But 1964 was also the year that the Civil Rights Act was passed that was supposed to outlaw segregation in public places, so movie theaters and restaurants and things like that. In your experience of growing up in Louise, and I know you lived out in the country, so you probably didn't do very much, but was there this separate but equal outside of school, and was that a changing time period around when you were going to Louisa County High School?
Yes, and because we were closer to Richmond than we were to Charlottesville, and we never came as a family to the town of Louisa. I went to school here, but we never ventured to downtown Louisa. So my experience is around the Richmond area, but I, you know, recall very well growing up with the black and colored, or at least colored and white water fountains, separate bathrooms, the lunch counters that was, you know, off limits to blacks. So I remember that as a, you know, elementary school student as we went to Richmond. So coming to, you know, Louisa with none of that, you know, being present was kind of eye-opening also, that I kind of spent my formative years, you know, having that ingrained in me, the separation between black and white. And Louisa, at least when I came to high school, saw those barriers removed.
And so, and you might not be able to remember what you were thinking in that moment, but if you look back, did it feel like this period of change, that things were changing, or did it just feel like you were going to school?
More felt like I was going to school. Yeah. Watching the news, and, you know, there were the riots down south, and you know, Martin Luther King was clearly at the high, one of his highs as far as being well known and also hated. And there was, you know, kids in the school on the bus talking about, you know, the troublemaker, and use names like Martin Luther Coon. And it was pretty, and they, you know, pretty much was open about, you know, the civil rights movement. They just saw it as troublemakers and agitators, and why are they trying to, you know, change the way things are. So that was kind of talked about, less so among the adults or teachers, but clearly the students was kind of, you know, sharing some of that among themselves, that was, you know, they weren't trying to keep it quiet from those of us who were black.
And from your perspective now, looking back on that time period, do you feel any differently about it? Sort of what meaning does that time period have for you now, isn't it?
Unfortunately, it tells me that not a lot has changed, that the same biases and prejudice that folks have had then have now, as we kind of look at, you know, what happened in Minneapolis with the George Floyd, and how there's different, you know, lenses, how folks view that situation, and the protests that occurred with the whole Black Lives Matter movement. It's not much different than the Civil Rights Movement in the South. It's kind of, you know, different players, but the reaction and how it's viewed is differently. And I listen to both sides, and folks feel passionate about their beliefs, but it says that we have a long ways to go with being unified. Now, and that's on a general sense. On a personal level, I feel much better. I have very close relationships with folks who look different than me, that I feel where I can speak honestly. And still, when it comes to politics, tread lightly because folks believe what they believe, and I feel when it comes to family matters and other matters involving the community that we can be, I call it, best of friends. Mm-hmm. And again, back in 1965, no, it wasn't that way. Color was the big separator, and I could not talk to another white person if it wasn't in a classroom on a subject that we were required to, talk about. But short of that, but there was a lot of stigma that I felt that I think there were kids who I think wanted to bridge a gap, but because of that pressure to, if you talk to a black person, then you're N-word lover, and they didn't want that stigma, and so they were trying to balance, maintaining that social friendships, but not being, caught up in the, overt bias that some of them exhibited.
Yeah, it's really difficult. And I know that you have lots of kids and have fostered a lot of kids, and so do you, when they're going through school, do you ever find yourself comparing what school was like for you versus them, or is that something you don't even think about?
I have to think about it as, my kids have had, birthday parties, and when they invite friends, it's just as many, whites as blacks who have come, and that's, been the case, from, the late 70s when my oldest was started school. So they were colorblind, and I say they were. It's society we live in. I think bias and prejudice is learned. That in elementary school, middle school, they tend to have very mixed relationships. When they reach high school, influences occur, and it's not as deep because they've, have dated interracially, but they have developed bias, and some of the friends who they had in elementary school, and some of that's natural, whether or not they're black or white, but I've noticed that bias and prejudice, I think, is learned behavior. That it's too bad we can't retain that youthful innocence, that we don't see those things. Color doesn't matter, but it does seem to have affected them later in life than it did when they were younger.
Yeah. Well, were there any things, or actually, I have one more question for you, and that's just what does being a member of this pioneering group in 1965 mean to you?
I would say it prepared me for life after. Being immersed in that situation, from being, I call it, an extreme minority, where I was clearly isolated, clearly, known that I was different, and I was fortunate enough to see the gradual integration. Each year there were more and more blacks came, and what happened with that also became more painful, that I don't recall ever being called N-word that first year, but the second, third year, it became very, very blatant. And then by my senior year, with full integration, I felt I was at a big advantage. One, I had a whole lot more black students, peers that I could interact with that I was just meeting, and but then I knew almost all of the white kids that were there also. So I was in a unique position of being able to bridge both. And by that time, I did have, some white friends that was friendly with and could joke and laugh with all of them. So that prepared me to be more comfortable in white settings around other whites. And later in life, when I may have been the only black in the room or only black in the setting, it's like, okay, I've been there, and there's no reason for me to feel less than, or I can't compete and can't, do as well as anyone else in the room. But of course, that experience being in a white environment caused me to make a choice to go to HBCU for college, which was, I think, was good also. That had not gone to a Louisiana high school and had that experience, I may not have chosen to go to HBCU. But both enriched me in a way that when I went to Hampton University for college, I saw very affluent blacks. I saw blacks who were highly educated, who had generations of college educated lineage, where I did not have that. So that, says that, as a race, that, we are not just in the 1960s, you know, getting on equal footing that a lot of blacks have been very wealthy, very affluent, educated for generations, just that they are small representation. But I saw all of that at, you know, my undergraduate college years that I'm glad I saw, and it caused me to be even more inspired to try to achieve, you know, more in life, knowing that there really didn't have to be any barriers or ceilings unless it was self-imposed.
Yeah. When you got to college, did you ever have conversations with the friends that you were making there about what their experiences were like in high school, and did they go to integrated high schools or not?
No, I didn't. It was kind of, and
high school's over, it's time,
right.
Time for college.
Yeah, I know, yeah. Some were from big cities, some from rural areas, but no, a few people didn't talk about the high school experiences. It was more, what was life? And I was in a minority there because I was from a country rural area, and a lot of my peers were from New York, Washington, Philadelphia, and, you know, they had their urban experience. And so that was kind of, you know, a wow for me, is life in the city and growing up and, you know, going to shows and plays and all of this that I didn't experience in Louisiana.
Yeah. Well, is there anything else that we didn't touch on that you want to talk about? And then is there anything that you would want future generations, you know, as we get further away from these periods of segregation, about what you would want people to remember from that time period?
I would say that that first year, there were a lot of kids who didn't stay for their ninth or tenth grade year, that kids were there and they kind of were gone, and it didn't registered at the time that they were gone, but as I look back in my yearbook, I noticed, okay, they didn't stay for that 10th, 11th, 12th grade year. And what happened? And I've learned that a percentage of them, you know, transferred to a private school to avoid going to school with more blacks. So I'm sure some left before 1965 to avoid going to school with blacks at all. But I guess after that first year or second year, as more blacks were coming in, some made the decision, whether they did or their parents did, for them to leave. And I'm curious as to, you know, do they have any regrets on that? I think my life was enriched being in an integrated setting. I wonder whether or not those that chose to leave, did they at some point have to be in integrated settings? So do they feel they were prepared going to staying in the segregated setting throughout their, you know, secondary education years, prepare them for life after? And that's a question they have to answer. But it, you know, life is an experience, and I've always kind of wondered what my life would have been like had I not gone to Louisa. And I think I'm enriched because of it. What I would like for people to know is that a lot of kids who were, I didn't know closely back in 1965, who were classmates, the ones that, you know, I felt invisible to, as I've came to know them better in later years through reunions and other activities, found that they were not very different than me at all. Their home experiences were similar. Some had, you know, bad home lives that I knew nothing about. That I felt blessed because I had mother and father at home, and they worked, they came home, we went to church together and never had issues. But as I, you know, talked with other friends, they had a lot of drama going on in their homes, that the racial issue was probably one small piece of the experiences back then. But I've come to know that, yeah, we have much more in common than we had differences. Back then it was black and white, that was a big factor, but I've come to know that you know, we hurt, you know, we experience life, but I've gotten, you know, I would count among some of my classmates from the eighth grade are now some of my closest friends. So the point to take away is that you can't judge people based on a point in time. You kind of look over their life, your life, and kind of judge, okay, how much have we grown, how much have we learned, and applying that learning to our life going forward.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much for talking with us today.
Thank you.
We really appreciate it.
All right.
That was great. How long did that go?
What time did we start? It's 11.
About 35 minutes.
Okay.
Oh, okay.
The first one was just under 50 minutes.
Okay, perfect. Do you feel like you covered everything that you wanted to cover?
I think so.
Okay.
Yes, I kind of allowed an hour and a half between segments, but I didn't want to rush people through.
I think that's good, because I also think when we have four people, I'll probably run through and like sanitize a little bit in between people, but we kind of just have the same group today, so I didn't.
Yeah.
I think that that's a very good point that you made at the end of your interview, because I think I haven't experienced a lot of pushback, but I will be honest that I've experienced a little bit of pushback occasionally from some members of the white community of some of the stuff that we... It's mostly when it comes around to like Confederate things and Confederate monuments and things like that, that I can feel that. But I also feel like some people think that we're gonna like judge who they were then through like a modern lens, and we're not.
Yeah.
We're not trying to do that.
I know. That's what I was